Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in today with Tom Brown while Dave deserves a little good time off. Happy New Year. So as we start and we look into the new year, there's a lot of things Tom and I always like to do this show first off in the year because we like to reset on resolutions. We like to reset on the different changes in tax laws, increases in retirement plans. There's a lot of different things that the first of the year, it's really good to go over and double check. But before we get into that, I did want to take just a second and just take a little bit of time to talk about the market. Yep, we are down this year a whole 2.17%. You would think it's a lot more than that from the calls and what the media is screaming about volatility and that's going down and we're in a bubble and all these things they talk about, Omicron, inflation, interest rates. They just start throwing all this at you about why the market is correcting or down a little bit. It's not even correcting at this point. But if you look at it and think a little bit longer term, we're still up 1 year trailing 23%. Last year, the market in 2021 was up almost 29% when you include dividends. That's the seventh highest gain in the last 50 years. And that's the third straight year of great growth. You start to think about that and go, I wonder why we're all of a sudden concerned when we have a small pullback. The market does this. It pauses. Like Dave said, not guaranteed, but almost certain to occur for the rest of our investing lives. We're going to have these pullbacks if the market does 10, and we did almost 30 last year. To have it pull back a little bit is not only normal, but fairly healthy.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we say that it's normally you have some at least a 10% at least once or twice a year. So it is normal to have a pullback. And I think when it runs up quite a bit like that, we should expect it because the market will always look to correct based on something, whether it's just temporary or not.
Yeah. And put in an easy solution with it. Everyone wants an easy answer to why the market does what it does. And there's so many things that we don't see or even recognize that could be affecting it. But one of the interesting little statistics that we looked at is when you look at every year back to, let's say, to the Great Recession, 2008, there have only been two losing years from that point. One was in 08, which was large, and one was in 2018. But the interesting thing is, on average, the S&P has down months between 3 and 8 every year. But in 2017, we had no down months. So it's interesting when you look at statistics and you start to think, well, why does the market do this? Why does it go up sometimes and down sometimes? Well, part of it is just repricing and part of it is sectors that go in and out of favor. But one thing that we can always say is this should not even matter to your investing plan. If you've made a plan and you say, I am going to be a millionaire, and this is something we're going to also talk about, how you can do that and what it takes based on my history and Tom's history and how long we've been in the business. I started in 1995. Tom started 10 years later. And what it takes and how amazing it is just 10 years and how much more money it takes to get to that point. So if you made a plan, start early, stick with it. Don't let it throw you off if you start to think, well, if we're going to have a correction, I'm going to time this one. This is the time that I'm going to get out before it goes down. And then somehow I'm going to magically know that that's the bottom again. And then I'm going to buy back in. The market pulls back and goes to record highs. That's going to continue to happen. So if you believe in buy and hold, which we do, we think if you made a plan and you're going to put in a certain amount every month, we don't stop doing that. That's why I absolutely love 401ks, because you can't really call your HR department every month and say, I'm going to stop this month. I'm going to start next month. I'm going to change it this time. I'm going to increase, decrease, whatever. It just happens and you kind of forget about it. And that's probably the best thing about investing. Fidelity said it well. People that were their best investors are ones that forgot they had money or unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, dead people or people forgot they had the investments. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's why 401ks work really well, because it's more difficult to stop them.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
I'm having a little problem with my mic here, so I'm...
Okay. Okay. Very good. So, and again, if that buy and hold thing, and people don't like it short term, because what they're always looking for is the next best thing. They're looking for that next hot stock tip. You know, when's the next Google, Tesla, Amazon? When are those next great stocks going to come? And they want to participate instead of just having the plan and being diligent. Because I can tell you 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now, you're probably not going to remember what the hot stocks of the day were. You're going to more look at how am I doing? How am I saving? How am I investing? And that's the most important thing. So make that plan. Stick with it. Don't let the concerns of the day throw you off. And then you'll be able to do what we want to talk about now, which is how do you become a millionaire? Main thing is start early. We ran some illustrations on investing in the S&P at two different points. My time when we started January of 1995, it was just a few months after I started, but it's a nice round number. If you were to put in a simple amount of $58,000, doesn't sound like a lot, I know, but if you put that in and you let it go until the end of last year, you would have made over $1 million. And all you had to do was stick it and forget it. If you put in $400 a month, you would get close. If you increase that slightly to $600 a month starting in January of 1995, you actually would have over $1 million if you continued to put that in every single month. So changes quite a bit if we look at what Tom's accounts would have done. If he would have started when he first began with us in July of 2005,
July 2005. If I would have had to get $185,000 invested, just leaving it would have become $1 million. And then if I would have put away $1,450 a month during that time, I'd have $1 million, which is incredible. It shows the timing of 10 years is how much less you have to put in per month to do the exact same thing. And we always talk about that. It is so important to start early. Time is a number one factor of investing, is to start early and be diligent and keep going.
And when you think about going from 58,000 to start when I did 10 years earlier to 185 when Tom started, that's significantly more money to begin with to get that. But we always talk about the last doubling of money. One of our favorite rules of 72 is if you invest and get 10%, every 7.2 years, your money should double. And flip that around, if you get 7.2 every 10 years. So let's use that last number because it's easy math, and say every 10 years, if your money doubles, 100 becomes 2, 2, 4, 4, 8, 8 to 1.6. But if you start 10 years later, you lose the 8 to 1.6.
Yep.
Those last doubles are the magic money.
Yep, and we've seen that so often in the last few years where people have been invested for a long time, then they invested with us, and all of a sudden their accounts just rocketed higher in dollar amount. And it just doesn't happen if you just stop.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, people always sit there and think, is that, I actually had a conversation with a client. They rolled in some funds probably 30, not quite, I haven't been here that long, so 20 years ago, let's say that. And they started to take a little bit of income every month as soon as they retired. And they called and they said, I know this may sound like a silly question, but I've been taking income from my investments for the last 20 years. And I have more than I started with. Am I reading this wrong? So if you do the numbers right, they did not overdraw on their investments. They kept it at a reasonable rate, so the account could have time to grow on top of generating that income. So when they looked at it and they said, man, I never really invested before, and they hadn't. Most of their funds had been in bonds or fixed investments their entire life because they were nervous about investing. So when we put them into the market and they first started, of course, they got to enjoy September 11th, the tech wreck, they got the Great Recession built in there, and they still were able to draw the income that they wanted to draw, and it grew, and they were blown away that it actually worked.
Yeah, I think that's what's so important about not getting out. Getting out, you disconnect that whole process, and you have to have some extreme timing, which we know you can't, no one can predict. To get in and get out. So to say, I want to get out and get on the sidelines for a while because I'm nervous, you stop that doubling effort, and it can be very harmful long term.
And we are human. We know that. And Dave talks the emotion of investing all the time, but it's really true. Only you can control how well you do in investing. You can pick the best investment in the world, but if you don't stay in it, or you don't continue to stay with the plan and keep buying and keep doing what you have to do, that's when the losses happen. Studies of the average investor, they really do make it clear how bad they do if they leave it to their own. They actually read a statistic, and we'll share a few of these with you as well. But they actually said that 60% of people believe you can time the market. Even though everything in the world tells you you can't, there's no stock pickers, there's no market timers in a hall of fame, there's no one out there. Yes, you'll hear people that get it right every once in a while, but if you call for a correction every single day, you're going to get it right once in a while. But if 60% of the people think they can do this, why is no one can do it?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I think it goes back to, you know, the greats of investing and how they say things, and, you know, you can't time. But, and that, what did Warren Buffett say, that in corrections, people that are good with money are the ones that get the money from the people that are not.
It's right? a most efficient way of transferring wealth from inpatient people to patient people. Yep. No, it's a very good quote because it's very true, right? If you just sit there and do what you do and you don't pay attention and you get through these corrections, just like Dick at our office, Dave's dad, made the comment, with COVID, if you wouldn't have looked at your statements for 2 months, you would have known there was a COVID.
Right.
It corrected so quickly after going down. We were back and running by, end of April or so?
And the funny thing is people will agree with you every time that you can't time the market, and then they will say it in different words and say, well, don't you think it's gone up so much? Don't you think we should wait a little bit? Mm-hmm. Or don't you think it's just bound to go down here shortly? Let's just wait. Don't you think in January it's going to go down? Mm-hmm. And they just don't even realize that that's what they're talking about.
Yep. All right. But we come back, we're going to talk New Year's resolutions, take some phone calls, answer some emails. So please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Or if you prefer, email jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petso on this New Year's Day, start of the New Year's.
Almost halfway through the
January.
Kind of New Year's.
I know. We talked about that and said we want to do our New Year's resolution show. So this is perfect timing, even though it's a little bit later in the year.
Even though probably 30% of people's New Year's resolutions are already done.
Yep. You know, they went to the gym the first week and now they're
paid all the fees and now they're. Yeah. No, not this morning.
All right. We are going to jump to the phones. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jim and Tom. You're back again, eh?
We are. How are you?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, you talk about a reset and the market, for instance, an adjustment, whatever. Well, a couple of days ago, I came down with a sinus drainage, you know. So, anyway, I go to bed. You're supposed to go to bed, take care of yourself, blah, blah, blah. You know, illnesses, we need, you know, the human body needs. I mean, you go through certain things, it's just part of life. I've been through many colds, many flu epidemics. But anyway, it's kind of like with a COVID thing, everybody panics. And if somebody gets a simple cold or a simple flu or whatever, which is now old news, I mean, they think they've got COVID or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's one thing I wanted to say. And then last night, well, anyway, I've got this house. You know, everybody and their mother and brother is trying to buy my house, you know. Apparently, Boise is the hottest area in the freaking, you know, world.
Yep, pretty much.
So, last night, you know, this guy knocks at the door, hear this knock, go to the door. And, this, you know, I've got this really deep backyard. And this guy says, have you ever thought about selling your backyard? You know, just selling your backyard. And I said, no. And he said, well, you can make $50,000. And I told him, I don't need money. And it reminded me of a Seinfeld line in one of the Seinfeld episodes where Seinfeld said, people don't turn down money. That's what separates us from the animals.
Yep. And you know, but isn't that a great feeling, Jim, to be at a point that you don't need to worry about that? That you can say, I don't need to sell anything. I have plenty of money. I've done well. I don't need to worry about $50,000.
Right. I mean, that, for me, that's just, you know, petty cash, you know, I got to admit. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, my standard of living has never been really high. I've gotten to travel and do various things by working my way along, you know, as a job or whatever. And so, you know, just, I don't know. But I never started investing until later. For one thing, my father started giving me stocks back in 95 through 97. And so then I would keep track of them like a baseball league, you mm-hmm. know. How many what stocks were winners, what stocks were losers, all that. So that's when I first started. So I got a really late start in life. But the thing is, when you're young, you can't expect young people to actually save. You know,
you just can't. No, you're right, Jim. I hate to cut you off, but we're getting up to the break here. So,
okay.
But anyway, I agree with you.
They've got to enjoy life.
Yep, they do, don't they?
Anyway.
All right, Jim. Take care. You too. All right, Jim, we appreciate the call. You know, as we close this first segment, I wanted to add a little email that we received. It says, good morning, Jen and Tom. It's great to hear you both. I've listened to you several times before and just wanted to thank you for your calmness and optimism about the market. It's not hard to turn on the news, as you mentioned, regardless of station, and become terribly depressed and pessimistic. Thank you for always reminding me to stay the course and control what I can control, my personal plan. The market has demonstrated its success if I'm disciplined enough to commit and not panic. So thank you for calming messages, and I'll listen to any other thoughts about just staying the course if you have them. Great email, and we agree 100%. Stick with your plan, and it's way easier to make it through the difficult times. We'll look forward to coming back the second hour, talking New Year's resolutions, some changes in contribution limits, but please call us 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown filling in for Dave Pezzo today so he can take a good deserved time off.
Yeah, he's really taking a really good deserved time off.
He is. Yes, yes. We're glad to be here. We actually were working on a video explaining what our office does this week, and it turned out pretty well. I'm hoping we can get it on YouTube here shortly, but it does give more detail on what a financial planning firm should do, what truly independent means, and all those words you hear now, fiduciary and all the words that everybody always wants to talk about. But we want your phone calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or if you prefer, email jstone@petsofinancial.net.
Yeah, I think it's so funny about the word fiduciary. I still, it's because if you look at the term, you know, people go, well, I need to know if you guys are a fiduciary. And it's just like, do you really know what you're asking? Or are you just saying that because you looked up online and it said, first thing you should ask for a financial advisor if they're a fiduciary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is interesting too, because for us, a fiduciary, it's kind of like a common sense type of thing. Of course, you would put your clients first in everything. But in all cases in this industry, that is not the case. But I just think it's funny. People want to drill home and they go, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think sometimes they look up, what questions should you ask a financial advisor? That's number one.
Right.
But it does make sense, because one of the statistics I saw is 53% of the people do not want to invest in the market, partly because they don't trust the people like us.
Right. Because they think we're just out to get money.
Mm-hmm. And that's why when we shifted from the way we used to do business, which was transaction driven. So if you wanted to do something, you called, say, I want to buy Micron. You'd call us up. We'd say, okay, we'd put the trade in and we'd get paid. Then you call and say, I want to sell Micron. You call us up. We get paid again. So every time we wanted to make an adjustment to a portfolio, we had to give you a call and say, this is what we're thinking. And every time we did that, we got compensated. So it felt like making a change was just to pay the advisor. Now, with that fiduciary responsibility, your interest always comes first. As CFPs, we have that as part of our requirement to even use a designation. So it wasn't that weird to us to start doing it this way. But now, since we are fee only, pretty much, we get paid to manage your account. So if we buy and sell, again, to same example of Micron, there's no cost. There's not even a ticket charge anymore because TD Ameritrade and Schwab took that away. So it's the easiest way right now to invest and the cheapest.
Yep.
So just think about it. I mean, we want more people to invest. That's the reason we take our time to do this on Saturdays and during the week.
Yeah. And I just think that, like I said, I think it's a word that's so overused. It's very complicated. They've had numerous things in Congress to try to force the fiduciary standard and so forth. And at the end of the day, even if you ask somebody and you say, are you a fiduciary, and it's an insurance agent or whatever, them saying yes doesn't mean anything, right? Because they'll say, I always put you first. I always put my clients first. And that's basically what fiduciary standard means. You really need to find out more how the company does business and how they get paid. Mm-hmm. That is really the questions you should be asking.
Yes, that is. And there's a difference too in the former world that we were in. There's a suitability requirement, which suitability is different than fiduciary. Suitability means the product is suitable to what you're trying to accomplish, but potentially there could be a higher payment to the person selling it than another investment. So you buy stock or you buy an insurance product like an annuity, there's built-in commission inside of that product. Could you justify either of them working for your situation? Potentially, it meets the suitability requirement, but not necessarily the fiduciary. So when Tom's saying you need to know how people are compensated, that should be your number one question. And then you'll know, based on those answers, if they meet that fiduciary requirement. So just look at it a little bit different. Always make sure you know what you're getting for what you're paying and what that all covers. Sometimes we sit around and make and that's why we did this video as well, to kind of explain who our office is and how we work, but also so that you understand we aren't just asset allocators. We don't just build a portfolio and invest the money. Part of what we do offer to clients, and most financial advisors do as well, is a plan for you. So we go back to stick with the plan. Well, if you don't have a plan, it's easy to get thrown off course. So we do go in and say, how close am I to retirement? How much more should I save? Going back to Tom and I discussing the millionaire, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much do we need to invest? That's a question we don't know. We won't have the exact answer, but more or less, this should get you to where you need to be.
Right. And also the habits. And you brought up, you know, what habits do we need to start? And one habit is always be an investor, continuing to be an investor. Usually monthly investing is the easiest, like you were talking about the 401k last hour, because it takes our emotions and our thinking out of it, and you just invest, and it's just a habit you do. You know, the old saying, not saying, but the old thing of pay yourself first every month, you know, and that is just every time it works out. Now, maybe it doesn't work out. You have $1 million, maybe you have 1.2 million, or maybe you have 900,000, but you still are investing, you're still saving on a regular basis, and that habit of, and not then trying to monkey with it, because the guy that sits next to you in the cubicle says, hey, I think we should do something. I'm going to do something different because I heard on the internet that you should be buying gold. So I'm going to get out of the 401k, or 401ks aren't good because they're high fees. So I'm not going to contribute to them. Those things are the things that take you away from good habits, and we have to be attracted to good habits.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of our commandments, mm-hmm. Invest more.
Right.
Or invest, one or the other. If you just do slight increases, if you get a raise and you're not used to living with that raise, instead of spending it all, maybe increase your contribution. If you've hit the magical age of 50, which is a good number for investing because you get catch-ups. Almost every retirement account you have will allow you to catch up your contribution. So if you're putting in as much as you can, and it's usually a dollar amount, we have a lot of people say, well, I'm putting in 15%. That's all I can do. Well, that depends on your income. If you're lower income, maybe you can do more. If you're higher income, slightly less. So just look at those numbers and see that you're getting where you want to be. So look at that. Start investing. If you haven't, check with your HR or your people at work to see what kind of options you have available to you, because there's sometimes things out there that you're not even aware of that you can do.
Right. And one thing that people, a misconception I hear a lot, is people go, I'm maxing out my 401k. And then you find out that what they're doing is they're just putting in as much as they can to get the company match. So if the company matches 4%, they're putting in 4%, and they think that's it. They can't put in more because they've maxed it out. And that's not true. I think, what is it, $19,000 for someone under 50 you can put into a 401k now? That is your max. So, and again, not too many people can afford to do that much right off the bat, but that should be a goal toward those habits of working toward maxing those things out.
And for 2022, the limit actually went up to $20,500. And if you're over 50, this is where that catch up comes. You can actually put in another $6,500. A lot of times, if you're not having a Roth option, check though. Ask your employer if you have that Roth option, because you do want to put some money into an after-tax account that grows tax-free and comes out tax-free. And also, this is a big one, if your employer doesn't match, that doesn't mean you don't invest.
Right.
You've got to get those investments started. $150 a month, like Dave always says, a cup of coffee a day in 40 years becomes $1 million. If you invest, it doesn't matter if you match, invest.
Right. The match is just frosting on the cake. It gives you a little bit more to work with in your plan in case returns are a little less than we'd hoped.
And right now, because of all the stimulus and everything, everyone talks about how much money people have saved. Saving and investing is different. If you have money sitting in your checking account or in your bank account, it's much easier to say, I want to take this vacation. I want to do this. I want to do that. Really sit down and look at where you're at. Look at your budget or your spending, whatever it is that you like to call it, because spending plan has become the new friendly word, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because budget's too restrictive.
Yeah, so budget, people have a connotation that budget is restrictive and they don't want to be restricted and be told that they can't spend money. But if it's a spending plan, they go, oh, I'm just tracking how I spend my money. Mm-hmm. So, and then I can then better focus it toward my goals, then people are attracted to that kind of plan better than being restricted.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I heard that was kind of cool going back to that is if you name your savings accounts, so you don't just have savings sitting there for whatever. Say you've always wanted to take a trip to Hawaii, make it your Hawaii account. And as you watch it grow to what you need to make that trip, it's more rewarding. Mm-hmm. So save for things that are coming. Christmas is a big one, comes every year. Save for these things that are going to happen. Cars break. We know that. Things go wrong. If you have savings set aside to pay for it, that's great. But then invest and look at what you've got on credit cards or any other debt, because consumer debt is very devastating to your spending plan.
Right.
If you have too many debts, and this is a new thing that they talk about, is the payment plans that you can do. You can like make four equal payments instead of buying it on credit. You just commit to say, I get this product on Amazon and I make four payments. Well, that's still debt. You've still agreed to make those payments over the next 4 months. They're actually talking about how they're going to reflect that on credit reports, because if you're trying to apply for a home loan or something and you have five of these set up, can you really afford to buy as much as you could? Because it's not reported on your credit report at this time. So be careful how many of those you do, because it sounds easy. It's either 100 now or 25 for the next 4 weeks. You still are committed to make those payments.
Right. And if you're getting to a point where you're having to do some sort of payment plan, that just means you can't afford it. That's a great thing of going, well, evidently, and it's an age-old thing that we don't do too much because it's so easy for people to buy now and pay later, that we just don't think about that and think, you know, what can you truly afford and what can you pay for or make payments on? And a lot of times that's where people get trapped in bad habits, because then once you get a habit of doing a payment plan every time you buy something, that's where it becomes something where you're constantly in payments. And over 50% of people that are in 6 month no cash down, you know, pay later, don't. And they end up getting all the interest and all the fees that they were supposed to not get charged because they were paying, getting free money for 6 months. So a lot of times people don't do that because they don't have a plan to pay it and they couldn't afford it in the first place.
And go through your subscriptions. Do you really need Hulu, Discovery, Paramount? You start adding up all these little subscriptions that are a couple dollars a month, and then you look at the total and you think, wow, I'm spending $100 a month on TV in addition to my DirecTV or what other programs you might use, or music and podcasts and all these things you pay for. When you start to really add up those subscriptions, we were surprised, because even at our office, a lot of the things we use now are based on that. You pay for your phone monthly, cybersecurity monthly, doing Zoom meetings monthly, and you start to add up all these little things and you're thinking, wow, how did we get to this point? We never had mm-hmm. anything like this. It used to be you just made phone calls and paid for minimal things, but now everything costs a little bit more. Any tag on costs a little bit more. So go through and look at it and say, do I really need emails on top of this other food plan, on top of all these different TV shows? And I know $5 a month doesn't add up to a lot, but $60 a year times multiple different subscriptions does.
And one thing also, going back to your have a plan for investing more as you make more money, also have a plan to be disciplined, not to keep adding these type of things just because you're making more money. Mm-hmm. So we can have Disney and Netflix and Hulu, and that's because I just got a raise. And that's where we can get into these traps where all of a sudden we got 10 different subscription plans going out, and then they increase it a dollar and you go, a dollar, and then it's another dollar. It's like Netflix, is increasing their fee again, mm-hmm. their monthly subscription fee, and people will just go, $2.
Yeah.
Well, that's, and I don't know what the amount is that they're increasing it, but if you think about it, I believe when we have Netflix, so I'm not saying, yeah, criticizing that, but when we started, I think it was $9.99 a month. Well, if it goes up to $15.99 a month, that's gone up almost over 50%, you know?
Yep.
You just go, that's a 50% increase. Mm-hmm. What if, you know, we get excited about gas going up, you know, 20 cents a gallon. Mm-hmm. You know, this just went up and you don't even feel it.
Right. And actually, I think it went to $17.99. I think I just saw that.
So even worse.
Yeah. Right? Yep. And people still pay it.
But I'm subscribed. I use it all the time. What's $17.99? Well, mm-hmm. it's almost doubled now. And you're just like,
Yep. And there's so many different ones now. You sit there and you think, isn't Paramount part of whatever package you're in? And then you, oh, it's Paramount Plus, not just Paramount, and all these different things.
Right.
And I'm not knocking it. If this is something you enjoy, just know what you're paying for and go, is it really worth what we have and all these different things that we're not maybe even using? Maybe pick your favorite one and just stick with it. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have more New Year's resolutions for you, even though it is a little later in the year. Phone calls, please, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Happy New Year and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm going to keep saying that because this is our first show of the year. So to us, it is the start of the year.
Yeah,
Jennifer Stone.
It is. It's close enough. We can round down.
Right. I'm Jennifer Stone. This is Tom Brown, and we're filling in for Dave Pezzo while he takes a good long break.
Yes.
So we are talking about New Year's resolutions. And when we were off air, we were talking about net worth statements and reviewing those periodically. Stating your financial goal and writing it down so you have something to hold you accountable for is super important. Tom made a really, really good point on the break. He said, you can't control what's in your investment account or your retirement account, but you can control what you put into it. So if you say, this year, I'm going to make it a target to put $5,000 into my 401k, do it.
Right. And that's and they've met your goal. Mm-hmm. But what the balance is at the end of the year, you're not in full control of that. So you can only control what you can control and let the market take care of the rest.
Mm-hmm. But look at your net worth statement, too. We actually, Tom and I do, we pay attention. We were going back since far back as we could find in the files, which I think was 2013, 14, somewhere in there, how much we had saved and where we were and everything. I mean, everybody's had debt at times in their lives. You got to work your way out of it. So looking at what we had on debt and what we paid off and how our net worth looked, and it's inspiring. Mm-hmm. If you really stick to what you said you're going to do.
Yeah. And you get kind of like, wow, where am I now? And all that kind of thing. And you look back and go, wow, we've really accomplished a lot here. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't even been 10 years. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to that doubling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the rate of return, we didn't go over that, but the rate of return I had for on my millionaire to become a millionaire, when it was dollar cost averaging, where you're putting the money in monthly, the $1,450 a month was 13.82%, while just putting the money in, letting it sit, was 10.85%. It just goes to show you that continuous investing is such a powerful tool.
It also tells you that Tom started right after the tech wreck in 05 is when he started. So we had all that at the beginning of the 2000s, but he got to enjoy 2008. He got to see that big dip. And during that entire time, based on this illustration, as well as what he did personally, we still bought in every single month. Even through the Great Recession, we didn't pause and say, oh, this is looking bad. I think I'm going to get out. Wait till it feels better, then get in. We actually ran a couple illustrations and with real data. And we said, what if this person would have gotten out? So software lets us show what happens. And what if they would have gotten back in? Or we actually had people that said, I got out of my 401k at this time because, you know, I was just a little nervous. So one of the questions we ask when we start to work with a new client and they've been investing for a while is, what did you do in 08 through 09? How did you handle your finances? If someone says, and I just left alone, you know they're going to be okay and they're going to do well. Others say, I just took a break. I got out and waited, but I didn't wait too long. I waited just a couple years and I got back in. They give up so much of a chance to get ahead,
right?
Not just even, but get ahead.
Right, and that goes back to our habits thing too, that I have a client, he did get out and he felt he did it just right in 2008. He got out, he was in cash, and then he got back in and he thought he timed it right, he did everything correct, and it was probably the most dangerous thing that ever happened to him because at the beginning he expected that that's what we do, right? That's, we time things, we get in, we get out, and it's difficult for him to be able to, when there are things that are disconcerting, to be able to think about that we're just going to stay in and stay invested instead of making some dramatic change or thing. Because once you get that habit, once you get that bad habit in the back of your mind, you think that that's what you need to do every time you feel emotionally like that.
Good. And I just want to mention real quick, Anne, thank you for the email talking about when that video comes on. We'll shoot you over a link as soon as it's up and ready to go so that you can take a look at it. And if you have questions in the meantime, please give us a call. But we do appreciate the nice email. All right. So moving on to other New Year's resolutions. A lot of times they talk about checking your credit report. I think that's important to do at least once a year just to make sure there's no weird things on there that you don't know about. Mm-hmm. Close out old credit cards. Just because you stop using them and say, I'm done with it, you still have to close the account. Tom's better at this than me by far, so I'm going to defer to him on the best way to do that, but make sure you're doing that.
Yeah, and another thing, it does not hurt. If you're in a situation where you're not going to be, let's say, refinancing your house or buying a house or doing something like that in the near term, freeze your credit reports. Just go online. It's pretty easy to do. We actually did it in the office, and we all did it within just a few minutes. Make sure you close them on all three of the credit reporting agencies. And then what happens is if you do have identity theft, then they're not going to be able to open accounts like credit cards and so forth in your name and be able to do that. So that's really important protection. And so to do that. But on the flip side, if you haven't done that, checking your credit report, making sure there isn't any disparities. I, with the name Tom Brown, had an issue where I did find something on there years and years ago where another Tom Brown in Pocatello had, and I think it was completely by accident, but he had opened something and it ended up on my credit report and I had to have it removed. So it is important, and you should make it a regular habit. Maybe January, you know, you go, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to set my goals. I'm going to check my credit report. Just do it as if you're going to do something else like a doctor's checkup every year.
It always amazes me that just by a name, they can open a credit account. You would think there'd be some other precautions, like, you know,
yeah,
other interesting
things. I think back then, this was like
a long
time ago.
I understand, but isn't that crazy when you mm-hmm. think about it now? It's like, we need your blood type and 14 IDs
and everything else.
And
you got to have like two codes sent to your phone and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and if you have credit cards, make a goal to pay them off and destroy them. If you don't, credit cards are around for emergencies. I like to use it personally for anything I do online, because if there's an issue and there's fraudulent purchases on credit cards, often you're redoing your credit and having a new card sent to you. But if it's on a credit card, you can just dispute it and wait for them to decide that it's right and pay you back, right? It's not a big deal. But if you're using a debit card, I get a little nervous giving control of my cash. So I have a credit card for emergencies and online purchases, but I don't think you need a credit card from every store you go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw them at, you can get them from PetSmart and all these places now. And you think, why do you need a credit card for? Mm-hmm. Anyways, so don't get a credit card. I don't care if they're going to give you 100% off your purchase. It's not worth it. They know they're going to make money on you. That's why they're giving you something.
Yep.
So don't do it. All right. Also, this one I thought was interesting. I hadn't heard about this before, but before we go to our break, I wanted to mention this one. Have no spend days. I thought that was interesting. A day that you spend nothing, or no spend weeks. So if you buy your groceries on Sunday, decide this week I'm not going to spend anything more. I've got my food covered. I got my gas filled up in my car. I'm not going to spend. And see how that works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. We've actually done that. It's been a while, but we've done that. And it is a great way for you to kind of get a reset on your bank account. Mm-hmm. So if you don't balance your checkbook, which I would say more and more people don't do, then it's a great way to say, okay, here's how much is in there. I'm just not going to spend any money, and allow that to kind of reset and then start getting control of your spending plan. And that's mm-hmm. a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. And I always think that you should know where your money's going to, right? It just becomes really easy to start sliding the card and then pay your credit card bill off. That's why for everyday spending, it's probably better to use some sort of a, I don't know if you call it an envelope system, but have that spending plan down, that this is what I'm going to spend on this item, and not just swipe the card and then go, oh, how did I get such a large credit card bill?
And in that Dave Ramsey program, they do discuss that people that use credit cards don't feel the money as much. So they will overspend, and it's a natural human thing, right? Mm-hmm. You just, what's another couple bucks, or what's this, or I'll mm-hmm. buy yours too. And they're just swiping. They're losing connection with the money. So they even if you pay it off every month, you end up paying more off every month than you would if you were closer to actually spending the money that you were touching.
Mm-hmm. And as we go to a cashless society, maybe we're going to become bigger spenders. So get it under control somehow, even if mm-hmm. you don't use cash. All right, going to take a break, but we do want your phone calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Happy New Year. This is our Happy New Year show. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown, filling in for Dave Petso, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Wow, time goes quick, doesn't it?
I know.
It seems like we just got here.
I know. It's You mean this year or?
A lot years go quickly as well, but the time here on the radio goes really quick too. So Dave, thank you for letting us do this. It's really an honor to fill in for you. You've done an amazing job on this show for the last, almost 40, 30?
I think it's 40.
Yeah, forever. So we appreciate it and we're happy that you get to take vacation and we're happy you do so we can fill in for you.
Yeah, it works out great.
Yes, it sure does. All right. So
the only thing, remember, Jennifer had a nightmare this week that she had to do that Dave called her right before the radio program started and said, I need to do the radio. And it was just like 10 minutes to go.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. Yeah, it was good. But you know what? He usually gives us way more notice than that. So that was quite funny. All right. We're doing New Year's resolutions. We're going to talk a little bit about the changes of contributions on IRAs because they haven't gone up forever. But the limits, like we said, on 401ks have gone up. Simples, the adjustment on required minimum distributions. But before we do that, we're going to jump to the phones real quick. Terry, how are you?
Good. When's the party down at the shop?
Party? Are we having a party? Oh, because Dave's on vacation?
Well, if the boss is away, isn't everybody going to have a good time?
We're just recovering from the party. You missed it. It was yesterday.
Actually, it's quite... I think that... Yeah, that's a good idea. We should think about that, huh?
Yeah, I think we should. Terry, we'll let you know.
We will.
Oh, okay. Oh, I get an invite to boot. Hot
there
diggity.
You go. Yes. So what can we help you with this morning?
Well, no, I was just out of tongue firmly in cheek. I was going to ask Tom if he's ready to train me up on the prevaricacies of buying crypto.
Yeah, you bet. I'll start that class here. It's a midnight tonight if you're available. I'll be doing that. Terry, I know after talking to you just recently, I think you should be doing the class. You know a lot more about it than I do, for sure.
Well, all I know is I haven't gained much, and I haven't lost much yet, and it's been an education, I'll guarantee.
I bet. Yep. Still really a strange thing for us, so we're still trying to wrap our minds around it. We had a conversation Friday with someone about it, too. Just can't get there.
Yep. Yeah, well, I just want to make sure I don't have the boys from the Infernal Revenue Service coming by to talk to me. So
you know, they're pretty messed up right now. I don't think they're paying attention too much right now. But that's right. You know, that is one thing that they're really going to be focusing on is finding out who's out there trading cryptocurrency because it has been largely going on unreported.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the first questions I saw when I logged into the software program that I have been using in the past, and it actually said that right on it. Do you trade crypto? Was like one of the first questions.
Mm-hmm. And there's been on the tax returns, it's been asking that for a couple of years now, but now it's going to be more kind of in your face about it. But I think a lot of people don't realize what they're supposed to be reporting, but they'll figure it out one way or the other.
Well, we'll just do the Limbaugh idea and just pay a little bit extra so we can at least have an excuse, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But going back to, and I deal with cash. I carry cash, and this is how I buy my whatever I need. If I don't have the cash, I can't afford it. And doing away with the word budget, no. It is a budget, by God, and one of the great lessons in life I learned is the hardest thing to do is often the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if it makes you uncomfortable, it's probably something you ought to think really hard and find a way to do it.
Yep, it's all about discipline, isn't it?
That's discipline and perspective. I've been saying that for years talking on the show here.
Yep, absolutely.
But basically, that was it. I just wanted to call up and harass y'all and make sure Tom's schedule isn't filled up so he can guide me through all this fun stuff coming up for the next month or so.
Yep, it's coming up quick.
It is. All right, Terry, well, you have a wonderful weekend. We always like talking to you.
Well, if I don't, it's my own darn fault, but thank you for the thought, Jennifer.
Oh, you bet. Take care. All right, so let's get back to some New Year's resolutions, but we have plenty of time for phone calls. It's 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email jstone@petsofinancial.net. This is another one that I thought was good, going back to eliminating one bad money habit. So if you know you're overspending in one area, make it a resolution to stop.
Right.
I mean, if you think you go out to eat too much, maybe cut it back to one time a week instead of three. If you do drink too much, or if you go get that cup of coffee every day, whatever your one bad money habit is that you really think, you know, it's going to take a little bit of discipline, but I could really easily cut that, make that a resolution.
Yeah, one thing that's easy, well, yeah, one thing to do is if you do go out to eat, just drink water with your meal instead of some other drinks, because if you look at how much you're getting, how much more your bill goes up because of the drinks, it's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. And another one, exercise, right? Right now is New Year's resolution. The gyms are full again, or at least driving by, there seem to be a few more people there. I know it's probably phased off a bit, but exercise on the cheap. It is important. We all need to exercise. We all need to get out and do something. But if you say, I can't afford to go to the gym, or, you know, that Peloton bike that I have to pay the monthly subscription after I buy it, well, go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Go get a rail bike and just go for a ride. I know it's a little difficult when the weather's like it is, but there's ways that you can exercise that maybe you don't have to spend that $100 a month or whatever it is to go to the gym. But if that's something, one of your spending habits, and the subscription thing, that would be a really easy one to look at and cut back on.
Especially if you're charging the subscriptions to a credit card, then you don't pay attention to the $4 or $5, because I see those every once in a while where they'll pop up because my son's doing something, a video game or something, all of a sudden we have this $3 charge from Apple or something. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't seem, then you see, oh, I got a $3 charge from Apple five times this week or a month.
And you're like, what did that even go towards? And, or 99 cents or $2.99 or whatever.
And it's hard, and you can't drill down on it and say, what was that for? Right.
So. Right. All right, we're going to go to the phones again. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. Pretty darn good. How are you?
I'm good too. Thank you.
Good, good. I have a question about transferring traditional 401k money to a Roth.
Okay.
When I do that, does that new Roth money get added to my income for the year such that it could increase my Medicare premium? And what is that number, that line that they say, once you go past this amount, you're Medicare premium for that year or the prior, however they worked out those numbers, will increase.
Yes, that is correct. But I'm going to defer to Tax Tom over here on the specifics. So,
all right. So you're exactly right. That adds to your ordinary income. So it's just ordinary income that when you do a Roth conversion, it adds to your ordinary income. We're looking this up now to see what the maximum is before you get the surcharge on the Medicare. Do you see? I don't see.
You know, we don't know the exact amount on that, but if we, it's not on our cheat sheet here. But yes, you will, only to a certain limit, of course. There's limits that they hit you on. You could probably just Google it real quick, even online, and it'll tell you exactly how much that is. But yes, if you do Roth conversions, it adds to your income as an ordinary income. So 401k money that's pre-tax converted to Roth becomes taxable. And yes, it will affect everything.
So what's that called? What are those letters or acronym they put on that to indicate that you're going to pay more in your premium? How do they refer to that?
I don't remember what an acronym for that, but what I would do is just Google that and Google Medicare surcharge income limits, and it should give you the new ones. I know a couple of years ago, like the married filing jointly, was like $185,000 or so. So, but I know it changes every year, so I don't want you to hang on that one, and I don't know your circumstance if you're married or not, but I know it's high 100,000s for married filing jointly before that hits.
Okay.
And we'll look at it when we go on break, too. Yep. We'll look it up and see if we can find out exactly what that limit is. And when we get it, we'll get it out there, okay?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yep. You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to look up that surcharge. When we come back, we're going to talk a few more things about New Year's resolutions and other things. If you have questions, call us 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown filling in for Dave Petzo. We do still have time for calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Email jstone@petzofinancial.net. When we were last segment, we were talking to Bob about Medicare and when the premium increases. Tom has those numbers.
Yeah. So if you're single, then the increase becomes effective when your modified gross income is over $91,000 up to $114,000. Then there's different premium increases. So the first premium increase is at $91,000 if you're single. $182,000 if it's married filing jointly. So we, as we always do, we would recommend you talk to your accountant or a tax professional to verify these numbers and where you're at, but because it does get complicated when you talk about modified adjusted gross income, there's some other information that you need to know in that. So, but there is an increase, and those are the base numbers.
Perfect. All right. We want to spend a little bit of time talking about the change on required minimum distributions. When you have pre-tax dollars, whether it's an IRA, 401k, simple IRA, whatever type of an account that you have not paid tax on that is under that qualified label, you are required, it used to be at 70 and a half to take distributions based on life expectancy. They changed that number to 72. First of all, in 2020, because of COVID, you didn't even have to take anything out of your retirement account. But then on 2021, you did. So hopefully you did reinstate that and do so. But the law changed a couple ways. First, inherited IRAs have to be distributed out within 10 years. Second, if you reach 70 and a half, you don't have to take a distribution until you're 72. This year, they actually adjusted the table so that everyone is technically going to live a little bit longer. I've looked at the numbers. It ranges from 1.7 years up to closer to 3 years more of life expectancy as you get a little older. So what you're taking out, depending on market conditions, it could potentially be less than last year. Unless your account did super well, then it could be the same or a little bit more. But what they did is adjusted that so that at age 72, your first distribution is based on the factor they used to use for 70 and a half.
Right.
Probably as clear as mud, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. But if you were 70 and a half before, then you're still, everything hasn't changed for beneficiaries. So if you were taking a beneficiary distribution and the person had died before 2020, then you're still under the old rules. You don't have to take it all out within 10 years now.
But 70 and a half does not go that. You still have to continue. It's just adjusted the amount you need to take. Again, this gets very confusing. Basically, if you're working with an advisor, just understand that your distribution rules have changed this year. So if you think you're going to have a little higher amount and you wonder why it's lower, it could potentially be that that factor was adjusted. Your account did fine, but it didn't go up enough to keep it above or what you took last year. So don't wonder if it's incorrect. It's probably just adjusted. And if you're a beneficiary of an IRA, just make sure you know if you fall under the old rules where you take it over a life expectancy, or if you're under the new rules where every dollar needs to be out within 10 years. And you can mess with that a little bit. We think if you inherit a Roth, let it grow that entire 10 years. Don't take anything until you have to, because that's a 10 years of tax-free growth. So there's ways to do it. Talk to your advisor or whoever you're working with to make sure you're doing it right. Your accountant should be able to help with this too. They are aware of the rules, but that was one that we felt we should touch on.
Yep.
Also, again, can't push this hard enough. Look at what you're in saving. If you don't want a budget, you want a spending plan, that's different. There's software out there if you're more of a techie and you like to have something tell you all the time what to do. Some do, some like spreadsheets. Tom, I still think kind of falls under the old Ramsey style of doing an envelope, even if it's virtual.
Yeah, well, we still use cash. We get some cash. We didn't for a long time, but we started using that again because it just works for us. But
you know, and everyone has to do it their own way. That's the whole thing. If you set up a plan and it doesn't work, that's how come we say write it down, have some ways of measuring whether you're hitting that target or not, and start increasing what you're saving. If you're putting away 5% just to get the match or whatever it is through your 401k, try to bump that up within the next year or so to 10. Start putting 10% away. Start building up that put and take account, which we like to call your savings that you know you're going to spend, but it's not put into your daily budget. It's for vacation, things that break, because you know, cars do break down, new computers, new whatever might come into being an emergency that may not be an emergency. That's what that put and take account is for. It's not for education. It's not for college expenses. That's something else you should be saving for, but try to fine tune your budget. But the best way to do that is write it down and then keep referring back to it.
Yeah. And also if you're going to use cash, it's nice because you can help the checkers with their math skills, because they see you give them a $20 bill and they go, oh no, now I'm going to have to figure out how to get the right change back to them. And it's good for them.
It is. And it's really weird through COVID, right? Because you see the signs up that they're short cash and change because of COVID. And I still don't understand that. So if anyone can explain that to me, I'd love to talk to you.
Shortage when no one's using coins.
Correct. And there's a, with COVID caused that. I mean, COVID's been blamed for everything. But that one blows my mind. So if you know why coins are in shortage because of COVID, I'd love to know that fact. But look at your, if you're doing Roth, they were talking about with the Build Back Better plan. If you're a high earner, you can't do a Roth. So you can't make that contribution. So sometimes if you have no other retirement accounts other than a 401k, so this gets technical again, so please refer to someone that knows how to do this, you can do what's called a backdoor Roth. You make a contribution that's not deductible from your taxes, then you convert it to a Roth. They had talked a lot about that going away under the Build Back Better plan, but as far as we know, they aren't talking about it anymore.
Passed. So we're still under the, for this year, we're still under this old rule, so you still can do it.
Yeah, so it's just an extra step to get into that Roth. But if you don't have Roth money, seriously, it's a way to get that tax-free growth, because when you get to retirement, that's the most important thing. We appreciate being here. Look forward to talking to you next time. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll touch base hopefully soon and see how those resolutions are going.